We'll discuss the politics of climate change this hour with one of our regular guests who we reach out to often when environmental issues are in the news. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us. Climate change and the Paris Agreement to fight climate change are in the news this week. Donald Trump wants to renegotiate it, for example. And a study is out that says climate change skeptics too often cherry-pick or misrepresent the data about climate change. We will talk with our guest about all of these issues, but we will start with whether or not those who intentionally mislead the public about climate change should be held accountable. What do you think? Should they be prosecuted in court, much like the tobacco company executives were for lying about the dangers of smoking? Our guest says yes, those that intentionally mislead about climate change should be held accountable. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. By the way, we are broadcasting live from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios on the University of Wisconsin Green Bay campus. And while we don't have a lot to see here, you can, if you're in the neighborhood, stop by and say hello. We'll wave to you through the window. Maybe you can grab a cup of coffee. We are in Green Bay because we had a really nice listener appreciation event at the Titletown Brewing Company in Green Bay last night. We had hundreds, 300 some listeners showed up. So thank you so very much to those who came out. Thanks to all of those who would have liked to have come out. You really are the best listeners ever. And we really had a great time. Thanks very much. Well, let me welcome our guest who also happened to stop by last night. So it was good to see him there and good to see him here in our studios. Often we talk by phone. Nice to see him here. Michael Kraft is a professor emeritus of public environmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin Green Bay. His opinion piece about climate change deniers ran in some newspapers across the country last month. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. Well, first off, you wanted to take a moment to clear the air a little bit about the headline that one of the newspapers used when your piece ran. In fact, I saw this headline when I was doing some research, and it surprised me. Your suggestion was, for the title of this piece, was "When Does Climate Science Become an Illegal Act?"
Yeah.
But the Providence Journal went with "Climate Change Deniers Deserve Punishment."
Yeah. So the original title I used was "When Does Climate Science Denial Become an Illegal Act?" And the piece was directed at corporations, in particular fossil fuel companies, and even in more particular, ExxonMobil, which for years in the early 2000s had both denied the existence of climate change science and said there was no such thing, and funded many groups that did the same. So what I was asked to write by the Tribune News Service, they run a pro-con pair of editorials. I was asked to take the pro on whether climate science deniers among fossil fuel companies should be held accountable, particularly under the federal RICO law. And RICO is the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, a mouthful. And RICO is all about a conspiracy to defraud the public and financial interests. So let me at least clarify one thing that you said. I'm absolutely not in favor of silencing or punishing or holding accountable climate deniers. But it's different when we're talking about organizations that are in the business of denying climate science, and particularly when they are ExxonMobil or other fossil fuel companies. So this has nothing to do with individuals who, for whatever reason, say, I don't believe climate science is real, or I believe it's real, but it's not caused by human beings, or it is caused by human beings, but we shouldn't do anything about it. People, individuals, are absolutely free under the First Amendment to believe and say and to write about anything they want. Corporations, which engage in similar practices may be violating federal law. And that is the heart of the matter. And why I said, when does climate science denial become an illegal act? Well, if you're ExxonMobil and you do it for years, this might be, depending on the argument an attorney general wants to make at the federal or state level, and Exxon is in fact being pursued by state attorneys general in New York State and California and the Virgin Islands. We don't know yet whether Attorney General Lynch at the federal level will do so. She has been asked by members of Congress to launch an inquiry. It's a tough case to make. And the parallel was, and what I was asked to write about is this just like the case against tobacco companies pursued back in the late 90s and early 2000s? And many people will recall tobacco companies for many, many years said smoking is absolutely not related to ill health. And when they knew that was not the case, they were found guilty of violating RICO. And as everyone knows, they paid quite a penalty as the states insisted they pay for Medicaid expenses for people with lung cancer and so forth.
Is ExxonMobil or our fossil fuel companies, are they intentionally saying climate change is not a problem, it's not going to be a problem, we're not contributing to the problem, everything's okay?
Not now, but they did. They said for many years through the late 2000s when they stopped, Exxon now admits climate change is real. Of course, fossil fuel companies are not in the forefront of, you know, pursuing climate change policy, but they're also not actively denying it the way they did and funding organizations that carried out that message.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and I didn't mean to add to the misunderstanding. So, to be perfectly clear, you're saying that corporations that intentionally mislead the public on the climate science data, who are intentionally misleading the public, they might, they should be held accountable.
Well, I believe they should be held. If you're an organization, it doesn't matter whether you're a university or a think tank, the word is intentional. If you know something is not true, but you intentionally mislead the public and there are serious consequences, mm-hmm. and whatever the topic, we're talking about climate science, could be any, you're not in the business of seriously misleading the public. When corporations do it, it falls under the heading of financial fraud because investors in ExxonMobil or other fossil fuel companies have a right to know what risks their investment might be subject to. And that's the reason the New York State Attorney General is pursuing them. It's a case of financial fraud. Corporations are not allowed to make false statements about what their company is doing.
Yeah.
Individuals are free to say anything, and as we know, following the political campaign this year, anything goes. There are facts.
We'll talk more about that in a minute. But again, when the Providence Journal went with climate change deniers deserve punishment, which is not what you said, what happened and what kind of reaction did you receive?
Oh, there was quite a reaction. The Providence Journal was the last of about 39 newspapers that ran the editorial. The first 38 produced three emails, one of which was complimentary, two of which were not, but nothing terrible. The day after the Providence Journal ran it, and it was picked up by the Drudge Report and many other, let's call them right-wing communications media, the emails reached about 350. They were coming in at about a dozen an hour. They are, well, let's just say they were not polite. They were angry, they were vile, they were typically obscene. People would say, I can't believe you think I'm not free to hold my opinions, or so I'm a climate denier, do you want to put me in jail? And many, you know, basically saying, you're not fit to teach high school, much less, you know, university students. Are we sure you even have a degree? How could you possibly believe this nonsense? And so on.
Well, you know, we have just a minute before news break and then plenty of time after that, but why do you suppose there are so many individual climate science deniers?
Well, that's an interesting question. I wouldn't have believed that there were so many and they would be so energetic and vocal in response to this, but I think they've been encouraged, as is often the case, on the conservative end of the spectrum, and I really think much less so on the left side. Radio talk show hosts, you know, the Rush Limbaughs of the world, there are many conservative climate denial groups that publicize. Climate Depot is one. People can look it up online. And they seek out editorials and books and commentary of this kind. And they urge their followers via email and other methods to contact the individuals and essentially challenge them, denounce them, phone them if you can get hold of their phone number, send letters to their offices and homes. So it's the intention really is to intimidate and harass people on the other side of the spectrum.
We will talk more with Michael Kraft, Professor Emeritus of Public and Environmental Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, after we check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll welcome your thoughts on this. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about climate change and the politics of climate change, and talking with our guest who says that corporations who intentionally mislead the public about climate change science need to be held accountable. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Michael Kraft, a professor emeritus of public and environmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. His opinion piece about climate change denial ran in newspapers across the country last month. And before we go to the phones, and we do have callers who want to weigh in on this, Professor Kraft, first of all, remind us what you mean when you closed your piece by saying that those who mislead about climate change should be held accountable. What does held accountable mean?
Well, it can mean many things. For corporations, it clearly, and then referenced in the opinion piece, was they should be held accountable under federal and state laws for possible financial fraud. So the RICO statute is a tough one to use. It was originally used against corrupt labor unions and racketeering, but it was used successfully to prosecute tobacco companies that misled the public, of course, smokers in particular, about the dangers of smoking. And I was asked to write a piece on the topic of whether the tobacco case is pertinent to climate change and fossil fuel companies. And I should add, these editorials always appear as a pro and con together. So I was asked, could you write on the pro side, which is, yes, it is similar to tobacco companies. So in that sense, what I'm saying is, if, like the tobacco companies, you seriously mislead the public about the science of public health, or in this case, climate change, there should be some mechanism to correct that. One mechanism is legal. Another would be the public should be free to criticize those companies. Held accountable does not necessarily mean punished. That's why I objected so strenuously to the Providence Journal editor using the term punish, which nowhere appears in my editorial. And the implication was climate science deniers should be punished. I was talking about corporations, not individuals. And many of the emails I got assumed I meant people should be silenced, individuals, for saying something that's not true. Now, there are a lot of things about climate science that are not settled. The timing and the magnitude of effects, though, you know, how long will it take us to have what percentage rise in sea level, and what kind of science is the most certifiably strong and irrefutable, and which parts are still open to debate. It's an ongoing science. Of course, there are uncertainties. That's why I started the piece by saying we all recognize science and facts play an important role in public debate, and when things are settled enough, let's move on to talk about policies, choices, how much is it going to cost society, who's going to pay, what's the right approach. Those are all very open questions.
How do we know, though, that the corporations or think tanks are purposely misleading the public when it comes to climate change?
You and I would probably have a hard time knowing that. This is why we have attorneys. it's very hard, as I said in the piece and as we've talked about already, it's tough to prosecute under RICO or financial fraud statutes, because showing intentionality means you got to dig through thousands of pages of corporate records. And some attorneys general have already subpoenaed those records, from ExxonMobil in particular. What they are looking for is a memo somewhere that says directly, we know climate change is real, but we cannot say that because it will hurt our business. So this is the posture we're going to take. We're going to fund these groups. We're going to issue press releases denying what we know to be true. That is, you're intentionally stating something you know to be false, and you're doing it over an extended period of time. As I say, in the financial world, that's called financial fraud. You are misleading investors in your company. For the country as a whole, we're talking about misleading consumers, citizens, who then may remain confused. And what I said at the end of the op-ed piece was that, from my perspective, we have a fairly modest set of climate change policies, almost all of which are being challenged in court. You mentioned the Paris Agreement. I think the Paris Agreement is a fairly weak one. It's a minimal effort. Why don't we have stronger policies? Because politically, there isn't the public demand for it. And I think a major reason why there is not a stronger public demand is the issue is not very visible, and a lot of people are, frankly, confused about the seriousness and urgency of climate change. That is, at least in part, a consequence of ExxonMobil and other companies for many, many years denying the very existence of the problem. And many groups still deny the existence of the problem. It's a tough prosecution to make, but obviously some state attorneys general believe they can make the case. They are issuing subpoenas. They are putting together a case. I don't know that it's going to happen at the federal level. I'm pretty sure the New York State Attorney General will proceed with this case.
Well, let's take some calls, as we have many of them. If you would like to join us with a view on this, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our first caller is Toby in La Crosse. Hello, Toby.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Toby.
All right, so I'm an electrical engineer, and I've worked in oil refineries and in coal-fired power plants, and I've seen these rackets from the inside. And it came to me, and I wrote about this on Mother Earth News blog that I have, that it's illegal to shout fire in a crowded theater when there is no fire. It should be equally illegal to shout, there is no fire, there is no fire, when there actually is a fire. And the individuals such as Sean Hannity, who works for a corporation that's funded by these people, should also be held accountable under the RICO statutes, because as individuals, they are part of that corporate denial. They're suppressing an industry by continually shouting, there is no fire. I'd just like to comment on that.
Sure. Well, Sean Hannity is both an individual and a corporation, I guess I'd say. People who are on radio, television, write books. If I, as an author, say something that I know is false, I could be sued possibly for libel or slandered. It's a tough case to make, but I agree with you that, and why I included a paragraph on think tanks and what I called advocacy organizations, because it's not just ExxonMobil. There's a whole network of groups and people, but people in influential positions like Sean Hannity, who are, I think, misleading the public. It's just tough to make a case and prosecute. But yes, I wish they would be more honest about the facts of the case and not mislead the public.
Yeah, Rick Moran of American Thinker wasn't terribly impressed with what you had to say on several fronts. He says, as for misrepresenting climate change data, he wrote that groups like the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the Heartland Institute have, quote, pushed back against the hysterics by highlighting and publishing alternate opinions, promoting theories that, for the most part, have appeared in peer-reviewed journals. What do you say about that?
I would say I don't agree. Competitive Enterprise and Heartland are two of the advocacy organizations I explicitly had in mind, being funded by fossil fuel companies and other conservative foundations. And I believe they are not only on the wrong side of history and science, but it's a disservice to the public to publish information implying that climate science is sort of divided 50-50 between believers on the one hand and critics on the other. Many news organizations, including Public Television's NewsHour, have said there are no longer two sides to this debate. There is one. The science, while there are many uncertainties yet to be discussed and studied, the science is settled enough that you can't say it's a 50-50 proposition. CEI and Heartland continue to tell the public there are just as many scientists who don't believe in climate change as there are scientists who believe it. That's just not true.
It's 90-some percent of...
Well, there's a number
scientists
used, and people... I'm sure Heartland and CEI would quibble, and probably Rick Moran would quibble with the 97%. That's based on an extensive analysis of peer-reviewed publications, which found that more than 99% of published peer-reviewed articles on climate science agree that climate science is real and a serious concern. So even though there may be, you know, one, two, six, a dozen scientists, maybe they're not climate scientists, maybe they're other scientists, they say, well, that's not true and we disagree and the scientists are massaging the numbers. And that's not the way we as a society operate. As people say, if you went to nine physicians and they all said you have cancer and need immediate surgery, but you found one who said, I don't believe that's the case, which would you go with the nine or would you go with the one?
When does climate science denial become an illegal act? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Let's go to Caleb in Woodstock, Illinois. Good morning, Caleb.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, go ahead.
I was just wondering, what do you think about the impacts that we personally have, and should we hold ourselves personally accountable for partaking in the meat industry, which has been shown to be the number one cause of climate change and also environmental degradation, versus switching to a more plant-based diet?
That's an interesting question. The editorial referred to, you know, legal accountability and under public policy. But Caleb raises an interesting question. Are we all not responsible for climate change? And he's absolutely right. I drove here to get to the studio this morning. I burned some fossil fuel on the way. I'm having a cup of coffee here, and it was heated by electricity produced by burning coal. So, yes, we're all responsible. And I think people can personally make a decision to lead what might be called a low-carbon or no-carbon lifestyle. Many are trying to do that with solar panels. And that's certainly important, and I think we and other countries around the world would be better off if many more people made personal changes, one of which is to switch from a meat-based diet. Another, as I just said, was to switch away from reliance on fossil fuels for heating, cooling, transportation. In many ways, the world is doing that. We are beginning to cut back on our use of fossil fuels. The kinds of policies that this country has adopted, for example, President Obama's Clean Power Plan, much higher fuel economy standards that are kicking in already and will increase through 2025. Those are all ways we can do that. But individuals right now, every day, can make many decisions. Turning down the thermostat in winter, turning it up in the summer, those are all very easy things to do that allow us to do our part.
So in the news, April 2016 was the warmest April on record for the globe, making it the 12th consecutive month that the Earth has reached its warmest respective month on record. Can you give us a sense of Michael Kraft, what the significance of that is?
Well, you know, we're still talking about short-term effects here, but what we've had over the last 10 or 15 years is a period of initially a slow growth in warming, and now in the last year, a pickup again, whether we're looking at short-term weather patterns, El Nino effects. Again, I'm not a climate scientist, but what I hear and read about climate science tells me is that we're missing the big picture. Too many people focus on the short-term picture. Well, it was a cold winter, so climate change clearly is a hoax. No, we don't look at one month or one day or one winter season. We look at 100 years of records. We look at patterns, and the pattern shows we are clearly rising in temperature, and it's not just temperature. You know, that's why I don't use the term global warming, because that implies all we care about is the temperature today. It's the severity of storms. People who follow weather will know that in the South and in Texas, they've had enormous rainstorms. A foot or two of rain in several days and massive flooding. We've been told over the past 2 weeks about the number of severe tornadoes throughout the lower Midwest and the South. climate change models tell us that's what we're going to see more frequently in the future. I don't know if the short-term weather patterns reflect climate change, but that's what we're likely to see. And the drought in California, which is now eased enough that California has backed off the mandatory water conservation. But in the future, we're going to have more erratic patterns. We're going to have more frequent droughts and more frequent heavy rainstorms and flooding and heavy snowstorms. And that's all part of the modeling. But it's a little hard on the short term, day to day, month to month, to say that's clearly evidence of global climate change.
And I think perhaps we should talk about this. We had a caller who simply wanted to know, what is it that people are denying, or that corporations are denying? What is being denied?
So even if we admit climate change is real and it's happening now, and most of the forecasts really are less concerned about now than they are 20, 30, 40, 50 years into the future. And I've always thought, we're not talking now, we're talking the future. What is it that people are denying? Mostly it is what we call anthropogenic release of greenhouse gases. This is what Caleb is talking about. We make decisions, and corporations make decisions. We burn fossil fuels. And the question is, how much of climate change is due to human causes such as burning of fossil fuels? There are other human causes such as deforestation that are a factor, as opposed to non-human factors, which would be natural climatic changes. It's hard to put a number on it, but the whole debate about climate science and public policy is that obviously we can't deal with the natural part. The Earth is what it is, and there will be changes. Some of them could be severe changes. What we can do is deal with the human-caused part. And as the Pope said in his encyclical last year, the human-caused part is that we're heavily reliant on burning fossil fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas. We can shift, some say rapidly, some say slowly, to non-fossil fuels. That would be renewable energy. Could be wind, solar, geothermal. And what many of us would like to see is an intense research effort. And I know the fossil fuel companies themselves are doing this because the handwriting's on the wall. They can't continue to have hundreds of years worth of using fossil fuels. Look at alternatives. Maybe there are alternatives we haven't even discovered yet. I would put a lot of money into research on alternative energy sources, how to make the existing ones much more efficient, how to bring down the cost. And a lot has been happening. There's been an enormous growth in reliance on wind and solar power in the past several years. Wind power is now competitive with coal. People wonder why we're moving away from coal-fired power plants. A lot of it has nothing whatsoever to do with the Obama administration. It's just financial markets. Natural gas is cheaper. Pretty soon, wind might be cheaper, especially if we put a price on carbon, which is something many advocates say. Why don't we price the social costs of burning carbon? Put a tax on gasoline for burning gasoline. If we did that, the market mechanism, never mind government regulation, market mechanisms would adjust for that.
And we just have a couple of minutes before a news break, but maybe someone says there's no doubt there's some sort of climate change going on, but it's the what we do next is still debatable. You think that?
Oh,
is
absolutely,
still debatable?
It's still debatable. I think a lot of people are concerned about the cost. We had a primary recently in Kentucky, and in the coal mining section of Kentucky, people apparently are quite hostile towards Hillary Clinton because she implied coal miners are going to be out of work. Well, they've been falling out of work for the past 40 years. That's because coal has been a declining industry. Coal companies are going bankrupt because they cannot sell coal. But the broader solution, whether it's coal or gasoline or natural gas, which, of course, is a substitute for coal and power plants, but itself is a fossil fuel, the simplest solution, if we love conservative solutions, put a price on carbon. Just say whatever it is, 50 cents a gallon for gasoline. You put a price on carbon, you ratchet up the price over time, you lower the amount that's allowed, and let the marketplace figure out the most efficient solutions. I think we're going to get to that point. California already has. California has put a price on carbon and has a market-based approach to the subject.
We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up next, and then we'll continue talking about climate change politics with Michael Kraft, who is a professor emeritus of public and environmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking climate change politics with Michael Kraft, a professor emeritus of public and environmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Wondering if you think that fossil fuel companies or advocacy groups that are purposely misleading the public on climate change ought to be prosecuted or held accountable in any way, and how? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And as promised, we'll talk more about the politics of climate change. Donald Trump, the likely Republican nominee for president, said this week that at the very least, he would renegotiate the Paris Climate Change Agreement, and at most do something else, though he didn't really specify what that was going to be. 175 nations, including the U.S., signed the deal in December that, among other things, commits nations to setting their own targets for reducing global warming emissions. What do you make of Trump's position, Michael Kraft?
Well, I don't think it's a very smart position, of course, and it's not up to the United States to renegotiate an international agreement after all the countries in the world have come to some agreement. Trump obviously has indicated he doesn't believe climate change is real, and the very fact that one of the two major party likely nominees says the United States may not go along sends an unfortunate message to other countries that we're not serious. Of course, that's already the case. The Senate has voted to reject Barack Obama's climate agreement. And it's pretty obvious the country politically is divided about something that we've already committed to. And it's Obama's Clean Power Plan, which is a key part of his domestic climate change policy, has been put on hold by the Supreme Court. This is just before Antonin Scalia passed away. So that may be revisited. But Trump's statement does certainly indicate that among elected officials in this country, there is still a debate about what to do about climate change. And Trump, I believe, still maintains that climate change is a hoax. It's a non-existent problem. So it's not surprising he doesn't want to see an agreement that might cost us something on a non-existent problem. Maybe he'll change his mind about, yes, the problem is real, but we don't like the agreement because we think it will harm us economically.
Yeah, I did see a news release, release from some environmental groups saying that U.S. Senate candidate Russ Feingold was going to be joining them to talk about climate change and what needs to be done to fight climate change. This is going to be an issue in the U.S. Senate race in Wisconsin because Ron Johnson is someone who maybe isn't a denier,
There is. And I think many listeners would find this odd, that there really is a partisan split on this issue. It's not just Donald Trump or Ron Johnson. The two political parties are really on opposite ends of the spectrum. We see this as well in Gallup polls. I would urge listeners to do a Google search for Gallup and look for climate change. And what they will find is that there's a sharp difference between the two parties. Roughly 72% of Republicans deny this humans are causing climate change, and about the same number of Democrats believe it's true. I'm always puzzled by this. I don't understand why people's beliefs would be so sharply affected by partisan affiliation or ideology. But the reality is we see this in polls on many environmental topics, and climate change becomes an issue in the campaign because the partisan base for each political party has different views about how serious it is and what we should do.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page if you have a question or a view about climate change or climate change politics for Michael Kraft, Professor Emeritus of Public and Environmental Affairs at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, who is with us here in Green Bay as we broadcast live from our WPR Bureau on the UW Green Bay campus. Again, if you are in the neighborhood, we invite you to stop by and say hi. And we might be able to say hello to you. We are in Green Bay because we were here last night for a listener event at the Titletown Brewing Company. Let's go back to the phones. Melanie in Star Prairie is our next caller. Hello, Melanie.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, you brought up about the RICO law, and I was wondering, what about the public trust? Why is there not any lawsuits under that constitutional right? I know there are 21 young people that are moving a climate change lawsuit through the courts. Stating that the rights to life, liberty, property, so forth, public trust resources are being denied. And so can that not be used as well? And why isn't it, other than this challenge that's going on right now?
Melanie, that's a very good question. I was asked to write about the RICO law, and it's something most people haven't heard of. Again, that was the law used to go after, prosecute, charge the tobacco companies. And many state attorneys general have thought we should be able to use this against fossil fuel companies. The case you're referring to is a number of young people who are concerned about their own future in a warming world have tried to bring a lawsuit. And the commentaries that I've seen, it was surprising that a judge agreed to take that the case could go forward, because it's really tough to make a public trust case. But I'm happy to see it. I'm happy to see any legal action and political action that helps call attention to climate change and helps people make a case that we really need to do more than we are now doing. Even if that case doesn't go forward, it's a sign that a lot of people believe the progress we're making is just way too slow. And by the time we all agree on a policy and make it official, it will be too little and too late. So anything that gets climate change more visibly in front of us and promotes state, community, state, national, and global action, I think, is a good thing. I frankly think we should have done this 30 years ago, but obviously we're past that.
Thanks, Melanie, for the call. Now we go to Amanda in Lake Geneva. Hi, Amanda. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, my comment slash question is really similar to that last caller's. And whether it's with environmental policy things or health policy, I studied health in college, and places in Europe are so really quick and down with protecting their people and making things that people put, like preservatives and chemicals and things that go into food, they just ban it countrywide. And why do you think that the United States is so slow to jump on things that are clearly like a good idea and for the earth and for people? I feel like they're just, generally really slow to accept those changes. Why do you think that is?
Well, the United States sometimes is faster than other countries in acting, and sometimes slower. A lot when we're slower, I think it reflects the heritage of this country and the fact that we place so much emphasis on individual rights and private property rights and make it tough for government to act, and especially to act quickly. But you commented on public health. That's another aspect of climate change. Right now, we're having a debate in the U.S. Congress and among states about the Zika virus and other tropical diseases that are migrating north. And that's one of the little noticed consequences of climate change, which is as the world warms, what used to be tropical diseases are going to be diseases we find in non-tropical areas. That is, as the world warms, viruses, bacteria, carriers are going to be moving north. And so the United States is already in the southern part of this country facing a Zika virus, not yet in Wisconsin. But that was from somebody who came.
Right.
So that's a sign that that the world is changing, and that diseases and public health risks that we have not dealt with previously may be before us before too long.
Let's take another call. Pauline in Kenosha is with us now. Hi, Pauline.
Hi. So I would consider myself an eco-conscious person, and I kind of monitor things, and I do believe there should be a place for government in this whole topic. But it kind of seems disingenuous that the professor is advocating for a free market approach, but then says the government should tax this fuel, that fuel, and let the market work it out, when that's clearly not what the free market entails. And it kind of disturbs me that this is a man teaching our children, and it seems disingenuous.
Okay, let me respond to that. What I meant to say with the carbon tax is I do believe a free market is a better approach than regulation. President Obama himself long told Congress he would prefer that Congress enact a national climate change policy than to rely on EPA regulation, which is what he's now doing with the Clean Power Plan, because Congress would not act. But there is a role for government. Free markets don't work perfectly all the time, and I think climate change and many environmental problems are precisely because free markets And even the most conservative free market economists will say sometimes markets fail and they create externalities that are not priced into the goods they sell. And so when we buy a gallon of gasoline, we're not paying the social cost of carbon. What I'm saying is I like free markets for their efficiency, but you got to tweak that market by saying we need to take into account the social impact of burning fossil fuels, whatever that value is, and I'll leave it up to professional economists to figure it out. Let's just tack that on, but then get out of the way and let the markets work. I don't think that's inconsistent, and I agree we need to rely more on free markets.
I only have about a minute or so. Back to your piece. How optimistic are you that those that deliberately mislead the public on climate change science will be held accountable?
And I'm not optimistic at all. I think it's a tough case to make. I think the Attorney General, the Federal Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, I would be amazed if she pursued this case. I do think it likely that some state attorneys general, particularly Kamala Harris in California and Schneiderman in New York, will pursue the case. They've indicated they intend to do that. They may or may not succeed. So part of the case being made here is people who intentionally mislead the public ought to be put on notice that that's not acceptable. Whether it's legally enforceable is another matter. But I think it's high time we no longer easily accept the idea that anybody can say anything they want, particularly if they are a public organization or a corporation. The tobacco companies learned they could not lie about the public health effects. They paid a big price for years of misleading the public intentionally. I believe fossil fuel companies have done the same. They're no longer doing it now because they recognize they had to stop. But they're still not being as honest as they could be about the consequences of their products.
Thank you for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me.
Michael Kraft, a professor emeritus of public and environmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. His opinion piece about climate change science deniers ran in newspapers across the country last month. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Brianne Chasso, and to Naisha Ellison for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.